TSOP, the sound of Philadelphia, from writers, producers, arrangers, and recording artists McFadden and Whitehead. It's Ain't No Stopping Us Now. And we've got a special guest. He is one of the broadcast pioneers of Philadelphia radio. Now, his extensive career includes on air as a radio personality at the legendary WFIL. He's also a production engineer, a disc jockey. He was chief engineer at WYSP right here in the city of Philadelphia. Has designed and built new radio studios for WGLS-FM at Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey. He was a college professor and creator for the radio broadcasting as part of the RTF radio, television, and film program at the college. And he has served as general manager for the radio station WTYO in Hamilton, New Jersey, and was instrumental in the Philadelphia's upstart of WUSL-FM, which is currently known as Power 99 in Philadelphia. Frank has also served as the 37th president and chairman of the board of the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia. We're going to welcome award-winning broadcaster and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan, to the R&B Showcase Radio Show. How you doing, Frank?
Tim, it's great to hear your voice after all these years. And listening to everything I did, and I wonder if my back hurts occasionally. It was a fun career. It really was a great ride. And thinking about, you mentioned the WUSL, the first station I was on the air in Philadelphia was before it was WUSL. It used to be a beautiful music station owned by the Philadelphia Bulletin newspaper group, the McLean family, and it was WPBS. Although it sounds like public broadcasting, it wasn't. It was just they were trying to make money, and they had a guy there that loved beautiful music, and we played stuff. I didn't know who or what it was back then, but I learned it fairly quick, and straight reads, short news stories. It was kind of fun.
Well, you go way back. I mean, you've been affiliated with so many great radio stations. You go back to the record hop days. Take us back to that beginning. What first made you want to get into broadcasting, become a disc jockey?
Well, as a kid, it's funny. I was born in an Irish Catholic family. I was the oldest of eight. I have two aunts that are sisters, and I had a distant cousin that was a priest. And I was really being groomed to go in the seminary, and a lot of people don't know that. Matter of fact, in eighth grade, I filled out a card to go visit one of these places for a while. And typical with your father, you don't have a real close relationship with him at that age. And the priest showed up at the house and said, "Get your clothes, you'll come with us now." My dad, I'll never forget him, ran down the steps and said, "That boy's not going anywhere. He doesn't even know what girls are yet." And that's not that career. So then I didn't know what I wanted to do. And we started attending dances in the Philadelphia area. These small grade schools would put on Friday night or Saturday night dances. The Holy Child, which the church still exists, it's a different name now up in North Philadelphia. And I was just fascinated by the response of the music, the kids to dancing. I had no rhythm, but we all made an attempt at it. And I really fell in love with the sound of the music, particularly Motown. It just something in my brain made me just sit there and love it. So I went back and met the fellow that was doing that hop, and he used to just stack up 45 records. They're the small round ones. You know what they are, but I'm just saying this for the audience. Mm-hmm. And he'd stack up 10 records and just let them play, and the kids would dance. And then there was a dead spot between the songs. So we came up with the idea of if we got two turntables, we could go back-to-back with music. And we started, going out and doing hops on our own, which is really something I enjoyed. There was a time in my life where I was doing 3-4 record hops a weekend, just running around doing them at local schools, things like that. And that's what ultimately got me into radio. There was a fellow by the name of Frank X. Feller. Mm-hmm. The big station in Philadelphia back then was WIBG.
Okay.
And Frank was doing a dance at the Chevu Ballroom out in Upper Darby. Now, my other friend, Jerry Blavitt, he had a dance out there Friday night for years. It had a real good crowd, and we used to go out there. And I guess Frank was trying to see if he could draw a crowd on Saturday night. So I went up and introduced myself to him, And I don't know, he kind of took me under his wing. I started hanging at the radio station with him. We started doing record ops together. And Frank, actually, down the road in my career, he later became the PD and general manager at WYSB. Now, this was before they were rock. It was mm-hmm. right before they were rock. And he was instrumental in getting me hired as the chief engineer at WYSB.
That's awesome, man. So now, what was your first radio station that you started as a DJ on?
That would have been WPBS.
Oh, PBS, okay.
WPBS.
Okay.
That was the real straight delivery, you know, hands over the ears, good afternoon, 307, you know, that kind of a delivery.
So I grew up listening to you on the radio, actually, when you were at WFIL, playing the Motown sound, the great Philly B-sides.
Right.
And now, during this era of commercial radio, did the disc jockey have more freedom in terms of the music that was played? I mean, did you pick your own music?
It depends what time period you're really talking about. And let me answer the question this way. When I was at WFIL, a lot of times there was a block at night for Jerry Blavitt or a couple other guys that got to play their own music. So when I was at WFIL, for the most part, I was able to pick my own music. But mm-hmm. for the rest of the day, they had to follow a computer playlist. I mean, radio really changed about mid 1960s. Stations like WIBG, if you were growing up in Philadelphia, let's say 1965,
mm-hmm.
you only had one radio station to listen to for kind of the rock and roll. There were two black stations, 1310, which was WHAT,
mm-hmm.
and WDAS AM, which mm-hmm. was not, you know, connected to the FM. And if you wanted to hear, you know, Jocko Henderson or Butterball or Jerry Blavitt, who went on those stations, they got to play what they wanted, and it was great music. Problem was, they didn't have real powerful signals, and they didn't have a real big audience. But for those of us that like that kind of music, we kind of, you know, we searched it out and found it on the radio dial. And I remember, you know, turning the little transistor radio to pick up the signals from these small stations just to listen to them.
Well, when you were at FIL, who was some of the personalities that you were with at FIL?
Over 10 years? Oh, my God. Dan Donovan, who I consider one of the greatest radio disc jockeys in the country. Dan's, God rest his soul,
mm-hmm.
just fabulous talent. I mean, I worked with Joey Reynolds. I'm trying to think of what. I was never asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
Who all did I work with? But an awful lot of people. You know, it was 10 years. That's a long mm-hmm. time to be at one radio station.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Awesome. Well, you know, but radio has changed so much, as you mentioned, over the years. I know back in the day, you would often hear the disc jockey talking about breaking a record for new artists. Can you explain to our younger listeners what it means to break music in the market? What is that about?
Well, it doesn't happen today. It simply doesn't happen. Back in the day, let me pick up on what I was saying, the story about there was one big station, which was WIBG.
Okay.
And they had a big, big audience. I mean, there's a thing in radio called measurements, ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, they had 60 to 70% of the listening audience all the time. Where today, if you have 4 or 5%, you're doing really well. I mean, that's how much radio has changed. Well, these guys pretty much controlled their own playlist. They could play music. Some of them got in trouble for taking payola, you know, being paid under the table to play a certain record or to push it. And that making, you know, if a radio station played a song continuously, obviously it would generate interest in the audience. The audience would buy it. And then the record would go up in sales volume. Record company's happy. Everyone's making money. That's basically what breaking a record in a market is. But what happened was, one of the major changes in radio, not just in Philadelphia but across the country, was the style of radio. Back in 65 66, put yourself in a car, okay, you're a young guy, you're going out on a Friday night, you don't have an iPad, you don't have an iPhone, your only source of entertainment is AM radio. Okay, the FM was something experimental. No one knew what it was. And you only had one station to select, which was WIBG, another reason why they had such a big audience. And the disc jockeys back then, they felt that the message for for the audience was more of them and not the music. They even had jingles that said it's what's between the music that counts. So the disc jockey would never play two records in a row. He'd play one record, he'd talk, push his record hops, play another song. They might play 8-9 songs an hour. Now, we come up with a young guy out in Omaha, Nebraska, Todd Storrs, who kind of, he had a radio station. It was a tiny one, but it was no one listened to it. And he noticed at a diner that people go to the jukebox. They were putting money in, if you know what it, I hope everyone knows what a jukebox is. But if you put, people were putting money in and they were playing the same records over and over and over again. And he thought, this is how basic this came from. Mm-hmm. He thought, I wonder if I program my radio station like that. Just took the top 20 or 30 records and played them over and over again. And the station went through the roof. Just went through the roof. Well, now we have larger programmers, Bill Drake. There's a bunch of them, you know, that took this idea to different parts of the country and came up with this new style of radio where it's going to be the music is the message. And we're not going to play any local hits. We're playing nothing but national hits. And the disc jockey is going to be limited to how long he, I'm going to say he, because there were no female jocks in the beginning back then, can speak. And if they were going to speak, you had to do it over the intro, the beginning musical part of the record. It's a real tight, glossy, sharp presentation. Well, in Philadelphia, there was a station at 560 WFIL, the one I worked at, that was in the dumps. It was an old people's radio station. Uncle Philzy was there, Bill Weber, some of the other guys that worked in Philadelphia. Well, they snuck in a staff and went with this new boss radio format. And everyone laughed at them because they thought no one has ever been able to beat WIBG in the ratings. Well, in 9 months, they kicked WIBG right to the curb. They took over. And it's all with this real tight presentation. If you, there's a site, there is a WFIL website. I forget, it's Ron Turner's, but there are some tapes on there. If you just put in WFIL, it'll come up. If someone were real interested in radio, they should listen to some of the air checks because it's a tough presentation. I mean, you know, you weren't allowed to do whatever you wanted, and the music was picked for you. You just had to go over it. So if you hated the Monkees, you were going to play the Monkees if they were the number one record that weekend.
So would you say that was kind of the beginning of format radio then?
That really was the beginning of format radio. It really was. And it took off across the country. All of a sudden, we had KHJ in Los Angeles. We had WLS in Chicago, WABC in New York. You go to each market and see that every station that adopted this top 40 format just went through the roof. And, you know, I don't know how far you want to go with the evolution of radio, but let's stop there and see what questions you have, because that would have been, that was real popular until about 1976, 77, and then something else happened.
What was that that happened?
FM radio. FM radio came on the air before 1977, but they had always been in the background. Not many people listening. Then we had, Philadelphia, we had WDVR, which today is B101.
Okay.
They came on as a beautiful music station. Matter of fact, the fellow that started that, Dave Kurtz, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Dave was an engineer. He knew nothing about radio programming, but he knew he wanted to own a radio station, and he kept trying to get an AM station, and there were no licenses available. And the FCC finally said to Dave, look, we'll give you this FM license. And Dave said, I don't want an FM license. I take the FM license, and he did. And when they finally sold that, that went for a couple of $100 million.
Mm.
I mean, that radio station was a powerhouse when it was B101 and all that stuff. I mean, it really, really was. But Dave stayed out of programming. He got a guy into programming. He knew his weaknesses and his strengths, but he died a very, very, very rich man.
Mm.
But the beautiful music station started to take the older listeners away.
Okay.
And that makes sense because it was softer music. Offices, dentist office, they played the music. Well, then you had this station, an FM station at 92, WIFI, Wi-Fi 92.
I remember that, yeah.
It's now, Yeah, it's now a country station, mm-hmm. WXTU. We had some guys come in and start playing the same thing that WFIL was doing, but now it was on a different medium. It was on FM. So there goes your younger demographics. You're like 12 to 18 because they don't want to be with the pack. They want to do their own thing. It's just things in life haven't changed. So now the younger demos start to drift away from WFIL. And gradually these stations lost their audience. It's just an erosion and an addition to FM stations on the radio dial. 1977, I brought that year up because that was the first year in history that FM listenership exceeded. The boat was turning. AM was starting to die.
Okay.
And what made matters worse is the AM broadcasters panicked and they started grasping for stuff. WFIL. I mean, I don't want to give the guy's name because he's dead, but
right.
The biggest mistake he could ever make was Urban Cowboy was, I guess that was early 80s, Urban Cowboy was a real big film.
I remember
that. I
never
saw the movie, mm-hmm. Country Music. So he decides, well, let's take WFIL Country Music. And I remember the meeting. I said, Jim, people in Philadelphia don't listen to country music. Oh, they're doing Dallas, and everybody knows everyone from Dallas came from the East Coast. Well, how do you fight that logic? And what he did was by putting country music on, every one of those listeners that grew up with the radio station that had it set on their car radio, WFIL, number one button, it's out first on the dial. You know, I'm not listening to country. And the toilet went down the tubes. And this was a point that he then took WUSL. A lot of people don't remember this. He made that country. Now, I should say, for the listener, the WFIL and WUSL at that point were owned by the same company. So he put country music on both radio stations. That's like opening up two candy stores next to each other. It made no sense at all. So eventually he got fired for those decisions. Another fella came in, and the first thing we did was he changed it to Power 99 initially, yeah, and then it's been that way ever since. God, I forget what year that was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long time ago. And WFIL gave up the country. They tried to go back to oldies. It didn't work for too long. It's just the audience isn't there anymore for AM radio. It's sad. Mm-hmm. And what saved AM radio was a guy by the name of Rush Limbaugh. I'm sure everybody knows who Rush is, mm-hmm. because he was so popular. He was on, what, 400 or 500 radio stations.
Mm.
He saved AM radio, you know.
I remember one time there was four oldie stations in Philadelphia. I think it was in the 80s. It was like IOQ in 98, and then FIL, yeah. And something else. You know, it was...
yeah. It was PEN, 950 PEN mm-hmm. was oldies for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the problem is they're trying to reach... I don't understand the logic. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do oldies because the people that listen are too old. And I sit there and I say, well, wait a minute. Aren't these the people that have the money to spend?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if I need to buy something major, I don't have to go into the debt, you know, to get the money. I have money.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pension.
Right.
But they've always done that. They blow off anyone over 54 years old, mm-hmm. you know? Well, TV, television does it the same way.
Well, that's where stations like ours come into play. It's Tim Marshall on the R&B Showcase, and our special guest on the line is Philadelphia broadcast legend and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan. Going to go into some music with a number one track from Dionne Warwick and the Spinners. Tim Marshall on the R&B Showcase. That is the smooth sound of Philadelphia, one of the great productions from Mr. Tom Bell for Dionne Warwick and the Spinners. We have a special guest on the line, and we're talking about the evolution of radio in the great city of brotherly love with Philadelphia broadcaster and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan. You talked about Power 99. What was your involvement in the upstart of that station, Power 99?
On Power 99, I was there the night we changed the format. I wasn't on the air there. I was doing some production elements,
okay.
You know, IDs and stuff like that for them. And getting the new group, you know, some of Barbara Summers I had known, I'd worked with before. I'm trying to remember who else came in. Fred Bugs.
I remember him.
I hadn't known Fred, but a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
What a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's still on satellite last time I heard.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked to him for years. Just working with him, getting the equipment set up, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you were the engineer at both of those stations, weren't
Pardon
you? Me? Weren't you the engineer at Power 99 and FIL?
Yeah. I was more production, not in a. There's two kinds of engineers. Like a management engineer is a chief engineer. He takes care of scheduling, engineers, budgets, things like that. At FI owned Power, I was more of a production engineer. I still had to fix things if something broke,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't have to worry about budgets or anything.
Well, you were there during the whole Radio Wars period with Power 99 and WDAS, weren't you during that era?
Yeah, I was there for that, and I was, you know, here, I sat and I said the same story to my class back then. I told them the story about WIBG being beat by WFIL, and the reason they were beaten was they had the attitude, no one can beat us. They didn't improve, they didn't tighten up their music rotation, they didn't tighten up their, they didn't do anything. And they got their rear ends handed to them. Well, WDAS did the same thing. They were the premier black radio station in this market for years and years and years. You know, name jocks, you know, high-profile jocks. Power 99 came in, and they laughed at them. They said, no, they can't beat us. Well, people don't think about that. People want to hear music. That's what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So Power 90 came in with this slick presentation, couple of great jocks,
mm-hmm.
BJ in the morning,
yep.
you know, all these people, and they just kicked the heck out of DAS.
Mm.
And I sit there and I said, boy, is history repeat itself or what, you know?
Now they're all owned by the same people now.
I'll tell you, I don't know who owns what some days. Some people say to me, well, and these are people I've worked with in radio, mm-hmm. we'll talk, and I say, I don't know who owns that anymore. I can't figure it out. What's going on, you know? And I mean, what they're doing is just destroying the industry with these 9-minute stop sets. What moron ever came up with that idea? I'll never know.
Mm.
And they're taking the personality out of radio.
Yeah.
You know, they really are. And I think the first place that started was where they put automation on overnight.
Mm.
Well, overnight radio was where guys could begin. They could,
mm-hmm.
you know, hone their skills, practice,
absolutely.
Make their mistakes. Mm-hmm. There's no minor league for radio anymore.
And it's the job market is shrinking, I think, isn't it, a little bit for the on-air personality?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some radio stations that only have 3 disc jockeys.
Mm.
It's insane. Mm. You know, automation. People don't listen to radio just for music. I mean, it's a lot of the component, but they like to have a friendly voice wake them up in the
sure.
morning or take them home in the afternoon.
Absolutely.
And they want local.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm sorry, kid. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, that's okay. No, I was talking about that, you know, you've trained a lot of DJs over the years. So let's go into your career as a broadcast educator. I mean, most notably, you're one of the architects of the radio, TV, film program at Rowan University in Glassboro. You helped, you helped fine-tune that station, WGLS, and mentored students over the years who went on to have very successful careers in both radio and television. Why don't you talk a little bit about that period and how did this come about?
I was working in Philadelphia radio. I was doing hops. One of the guys I worked with was a guy named Long John Wade. John did nights at WFIL. John traveled with the Beatles. He was a pretty big jock. And John evidently went down to Glassboro State for, just a lecture. One of these guest lectures they call you and ask you to go down. And a fellow by the name of Mike Donovan said, we're looking for someone to do new studios. Do you know anyone? And John recommended me. So Mike Donovan called me, and he said, would you be interested in the job? Let's meet. And it's a funny story because being from a broadcast background, I expected a professor in a suit and a tie. And I said, we'll meet at this College Town Shopping Center on a Sunday. So I put a coat and a tie on. I drive down there, and here's this ugly guy with a beard, jeans, sitting on a bike, and you know, we're still friends today.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to me, look, he said, I need these studios built. And I said, if I can do it in the summer months, which he said would be perfect, I built the studio. And he wanted me to come on as chief engineer. And I got to be honest with you, to me, working in Philadelphia, Glassboro was, I didn't even know where it was. And I thought, I'm not going to leave Philadelphia for Glassboro. It's not a put down, it's just, you know, your own ad man. I'm working in Philadelphia. What a market it is. So then I hired a guy. He asked me to review the resumes of applicants after I turned him down, and I hired their first chief engineer. And he said, well, look, we're going to start this program, a radio, TV, film program. Would you at least teach the radio component for me? And I had been teaching some classes at Long John, the guy I mentioned to. He had a broadcast school, American Academy of Broadcasting, and I would go in there on Saturdays and teach his classes for getting your FCC license. You needed to pass a couple of tests to be a disc jockey back then. Mike asked me if I'd write the radio program and teach the classes. I thought, what the heck? I've never taught college, but I tried it. Well, that morphed into teaching three classes a year, you know, when we had the program running. And then I still taught, but I always did my other job. I was either at FIL or I was GM down at WTYO. And I used the students from Glassboro. I gave them their first jobs. It was a great way to get them in, going in their career, because it was a small radio station. We couldn't pay a lot. And I'd say to a kid getting ready to graduate, hey, how'd you like to do nights at this radio station not too far away? Oh, yeah. And it was kind of a feeder for them. About 1991, I think it was, Donovan called me and he said, look, we've changed things around. How would you like to come as the manager of the radio station? We really want to develop it. And I said no at first. I really did. I thought, I don't want to work at a college. And my wife and I discussed it, and she said, well, try it for a year. I said, well, that's a good idea. Well, I went in 1991, and I retired in, what, 2012? It was a long run. But we built new studios. We got the power increased. We got it on the Internet, you know, RDS signals, all that stuff with modern technology. And it was a great run. It was really a great run. I enjoyed working with the kids. And, somebody asked me the other day about work. What advice could you give? I never had a job where I got up and said, damn, I wish I didn't have to go to work today. Never thought that in my life. I always jumped out of bed, and I loved being around radio, young kids, and the whole thing. I loved it. And I'm not depressed, but it's sad what radio has morphed into. And it's guys like you and the Blavitt and stuff that keep the music alive. Mm-hmm. But, what about the rest of it,
Yeah, that's what it's all about, though, And you won numerous awards at WGLS-FM for this station and for the community. What are some of the awards you won?
I think we won about 280 awards by the time I left, including College Station of the Year back in 1996. Mm-hmm. Stuff from Associated Press. We won a Headliners Award, which that's a real big award out of Atlantic City. That was for a documentary series we did on tobacco and smoking and things like that. So, it was and we probably had about 40 to 60 students a semester working. That's an awful lot. But one of the things that I did with WGLS, which is different than commercial radio, was I wanted diversified programming. I went in there and I looked at what they were doing, and the first thing I saw was the only, let's call it, black programming. Okay, music. Those kids were all stuck on Sundays, and I thought, why are they doing that? Well, nobody else wanted to get out of bed, work on a Sunday. And I thought, well, that's not fair, and when's the best time for you want to call it black music, dance music, whatever you want to call it, 6 to 10 at night? Mm-hmm. So I built a block from 6 to 10, and that's what we did, and it worked out great. Put the rock on certain times, and I got women involved. I had a lot of women on the air. It was a great time.
Mm-hmm. The station always did have a great sound. Even after I was working there, I still, riding down the road would turn it on. Now, my herb, we had Double D, Fred Solerso, Tad K, Norm Donahue, and Ed Bankin. I was there during, I guess, the 80s and early 90s then.
I still talk to most of them. Double D has his own production company. I guess you know that, right?
Yeah, I've seen him online. Yeah.
Yeah, Ed, unfortunately, I just got let go from KYW about a week ago. Mm-hmm. He had been there for 17 years as their sports guy. Tad is working for one of the high schools. I'm still in touch with him. Who else did you say?
Norm Donahue.
Norm, I don't know. I think he's working. I haven't heard from him in years. I think.
And then Fred Solerso was there, too, also. He had a great show on there.
Yeah, Fred is friends of mine on Facebook, but I'm not sure what Fred does now. Do you know?
I think he's doing television, too. He's working at a television station in Florida, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, he's still doing it.
Still active, yeah. Still out there. So, and I think...
I just had one of my students just last, or about 3 weeks ago, I'm sorry.
That's okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. He's got hired as the radio announcer for the Cincinnati Reds.
Fantastic.
I mean, that's a big job, you mm-hmm. know, but I was so proud of him, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then, now, you were the general manager at WGLS-FM. Now, Derek Jones took your place. Did he take your place at that station?
Yeah.
Right
I
after?
Had to, I actually replaced myself,
mm-hmm.
and I recommended, Derek was my assistant for all those years. He was a student, and then we got him into grad school, and I got him hired as an assistant, because the station got too big for one guy to handle it.
Right.
And I had real good support from Don Farish, who was the president at mm-hmm. the time, so I hired Derek, and Derek was a natural to take over.
So it's interesting, there's only been two general managers at the station. Is that true for the time the station's been active?
You know, actually, there's only been one. Derek mm-hmm. didn't even take the title. Mm-hmm. I think he did it out of respect for me. He calls himself the station manager.
Okay.
And it's awful touching, but yeah. And he's still, I just saw him a couple weeks ago.
He's still there?
Once mm-hmm. in a while for brunch. I make him buy because I told him he still works.
He's a cool dude, though. He's a good guy, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy. He Definitely. Really is.
Yes. Now, you became a member and eventually 37th president of the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization and what they do?
Yeah, well, with the pandemic, I don't know what they do anymore, but basically when I went there, who was it, Cal Rudman
mm-hmm.
came down the station to visit, and he told my boss at the time, you should make him join the Broadcast Pioneers. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and they have monthly luncheons. They usually have guest speakers, you know, somebody from the industry. And what I wanted to do was to beef up the scholarship program.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we developed a system where we mailed out applications to all the tri-state area and looking for good grades, letters of recommendation, and we gave away a couple of scholarships every year, and they still do that. And the major fundraiser for that is usually around, well, it's actually the day after Thanksgiving a lot of times, the Friday. It's a Hall of Fame dinner where we put Philadelphia broadcasters into the Hall of Fame, some living, some dead, and then we have Person of the Year. So like Bill Wee Willie Weber was Person of the Year,
mm-hmm.
Harry Callis was Person of the Year, those kinds of people. And all that money then goes out to scholarships.
Well, what advice can you give, Frank, to the youth today that want to break in to broadcasting?
I'll tell you, I think the most important thing for them is to be on time. Put away the phones, you know, come to work 15 minutes early. If you're supposed to be there at 9, be there at 9:15. Get a cup of coffee. Look for someone to talk to. Introduce yourself. And don't be afraid to ask questions. And I think that's the most difficult thing for any human being because it shows our weakness. I don't know of anyone that would get mad at you for saying, how do you do this? You know, most people would take it as a compliment that you trust them. But you got to get a little bit of self-confidence. I think that's the whole thing. Network. Let people know who you are, and I think you'll do great.
Some great advice for our youth from our special guest, Mr. Frank Hogan, the 37th president of the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia Radio. 1965, another solid gold number one from the fabulous Four Tops on the R&B Showcase. Tim Marshall taking you through the decades, and our very special guest is broadcast pioneer and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan. We're talking Philly radio. Frank, tell us about some of your favorite recording artists. You've been in music, been in the radio for so many years. Who are some of your favorites that you listen to?
Oh, the highlight of my day was the day I got to meet Smokey Robinson.
Wow.
He gave me an autograph.
Awesome.
That's one of the few people I've ever asked for an autograph.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the WFIL studios. I just love Smokey and his music, you know. Listen to the version of I'll Try Something New. I mean, the orchestration, it's just great music.
Title track from the 1962 album I'll Try Something New from singer, songwriter, producer William Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. It's Tim Marshall on the R&B Showcase, our special guest, broadcaster, educator, Mr. Frank Hogan, and we're playing some classics. Pick another one.
Pick any Motown artist. I didn't like Motown when it went through the psychedelic era because mm-hmm. I thought they were kind of getting away from the core, but you know, some of it today I can listen to and kind of enjoy it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Papa was a Rolling Stone, came to, you know, really contains a powerful message.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to it from that standpoint, I like the Four Seasons.
Yeah, they're good. I like them too.
Yeah. I really did. I remember in high school listening to them, thinking that's really a nice group.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I got to see the show a couple of years ago, and it's just a fabulous show.
Well, let's play a track. We'll stay in the year 1962. It's a Bob Gaudio composition produced by Mr. Bob Crew. Went to number one on the R&B charts, number one on the pop charts. It's Sherry from the Four Seasons on the R&B Showcase. Tim Marshall on the R&B Showcase with the sounds of the Four Seasons. No, not the hotel here in Philadelphia, but the great vocal group featuring Mr. Frankie Valli. That, of course, from 1962 is Sherry. And our special guest DJ is Philadelphia broadcaster, radio personality, and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan. We're talking Philly radio, we're talking music. And Frank, in addition to the great Motown sounds and the other styles of music that you like, you worked at a country radio station. How about country music?
I found as I've gotten older that I can listen to different forms of music. I hated country music. Mm-hmm. And that year at WFIO when we were country, it made make me sick. But I can listen to some of it now and actually enjoy some of it, you know? Not the real old Mo Bandy, Hank Williams stuff, but some of the current stuff is great, you know? Lady Antebellum's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm. So, did you get a chance to see the Temptations Broadway show, Ain't Too Proud, on Broadway?
No, I didn't. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. It was very good.
I wanted to see it.
And it has all the Motown artists in it. Smokey's, they have somebody representing Smokey Robinson. It's a great play. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the Supremes were terrific. Mm-hmm. I can't name a bad Motown group. Mm-hmm. But I like some of the obscure stuff, you know, where you take the 45 hit, flip it over to the other side and play that. You know, like Supremes, He's All I Got.
And we've got it for you on Turntable 2, an instant request for the Supremes on the R&B Showcase. Love Is Like an Itching in My Heart was the A-side. We got The Flip from 1966. One of the great Motown B-sides, He's All I Got from the Supremes.
What a great song.
Oh, that
song.
Is a good song. Isn't it? That's a great, they call that Northern Soul, I think, you know?
And, yeah, but I think other than the Geeter, myself, I'm trying to think of anybody I know on radio that played it. Probably not.
You played a lot of like good stuff. I remember you used to play the Royal Letts. I Want to Meet Him and... So many great, you used to play a beautiful music, used to play on the air. David Ruffin, Statue of a Fool, and good stuff.
Well, that's a great song. Yes, a fabulous song that is, you know. When I played it, I was into it. I was sitting there, you know, really enjoying the music. I've seen some guys that it's more of a, without naming anyone, it's just more of a job, you know. Play the songs, read the cards, read the commercials, and, you know, go home. But I'd sit there and crank up the speakers. I used to walk the hallway for 15 minutes, a nervous wreck, before I go on the air.
Uh-huh.
And an old friend of mine, who's, God rest his soul, he was one of the best production guys in Philadelphia back then. He said to me, he'd say, "Baby, the day you stop getting nervous is the day you stop doing it."
Mm-hmm.
Great advice.
I mean, you always had that cool delivery, that cool laid-back, but just... beautiful music, you know. So I remember listening to you on FIL, Frank Hogan.
Hey. Well, thank you, Tim. You make me feel good that one person remembers it.
Well, many of us remember. We all remember. You have been such an influence on so many and such an inspiration to so many students over the years who's went on to have great careers in broadcasting. And I want to thank you for being such a great mentor to me. Such a humble gentleman and just a great inspiration, man. I really appreciate you and what you've given to this industry.
Well, thank you, Tim. And I appreciate you guys staying in touch all these years. People like yourself, they'll occasionally send me an email or something on Facebook or Instagram or something. It's great to hear from the students. It really is. I love that to death. It means a lot to me. And, you know, as each milestone birthday, I'll get certain notes like that. And I think, oh, man, this is great, you know. This is what I did it for.
Yes, indeed. So, well, it's good talking with you today, man.
All right. Stay in touch, will you, Tim?
You as well. Thank you so much, Frank.
All right. Take care, Tim.
I want to thank our special guest, Philadelphia radio personality and educator, Mr. Frank Hogan, for checking in. We got the classic Motown sounds for you from the Temptations with Get Ready. And up next, we go back to Philadelphia for the Superphonic Delphonics. Ready or not, look out, they're coming to get you.